my bad knee's acting up with all the rain.
Getting old rules, man.
Man, it's awesome. It's the best thing ever. All right. Welcome to 10 Cent Takes, the show where we fly under the radar of lasting fame, one issue at a time. Ooh. My name is Jessica Frazier, and I'm joined by my co-host, the covert crusader, Mike Thompson.
Yeah, I'll allow it. Okay.
Better than some of the nicknames I've given you.
That's a pretty good one. I like it.
Thank you. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, fine. You know, can't complain.
That's good. Well, if you're new to the show, our main episodes drop every other week and provide in-depth looks into interesting moments in comic books and how they tie into pop culture and history. But today is one of our Dollar Bin Discoveries mini episodes that we do in between those deep dives. We spend a lot of time rooting through dollar bins at local shops looking for interesting stuff. And while a lot of the issues we find are fun and weird, there may not be enough for us to do a deep dive on at the moment. But we do always reserve the right to change our mind later. Each episode will feature both of us talking about one random issue we came across in the dollar bins, one that fits a theme one of us chose. I chose the theme this week, and it is heroes you've probably never heard of. So we'll talk about what it is, what goes on inside it, and why it's interesting. These are mini episodes that are meant to provide you with some weekly content between our more in-depth discussions about the weirder and more interesting moments of comic book history. So, Mike, what have you picked out for us this week?
Yeah, so I found a run of this at a dollar bin sale like a year ago, and I keep on meaning to read it, and so this was finally an excuse to check it out. This is Pantheon number one. It was published in May 1998 by Lone Star Press. It was written by Bill Willingham, penciled by Mike Leake, edited and inked by Bill Williams, lettered by Brad Tompt, and colored by Martin Thomas. I had no idea what to expect going into this, but we open with the superhero Dynasty, who is very clearly a hero modeled after Superman in terms of her power set. She seems to have super strength, flight, she can survive in the vacuum of space, and she is eating a very elegant dinner on the moon before she chases down what looks like a comet, but is actually another super being called Sundiver. He looks like a blend of Silver Surfer and the Human Torch in terms of general vibe. And Dynasty asks Sundiver to come back to Earth to help with some trouble that's coming, but he says he's not interested and instead tries to get her to explore the cosmos with him because he is basically a being that is completely above the concerns of humanity these days. He says, if Armageddon itself is coming, it's only local news. And then he leaves. But before he does so, he lets Dynasty know that the Outrider is coming back. And that guy gives even him the creeps.
Ooh.
So.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. Dynasty returns to Earth. Her next stop is Philadelphia, where she finds Blackheart. He's kind of a Batman pastiche who operates on rooftops at night, has a ward. And then he has like a kind of medieval or Renaissance noble look to his costume. Like there's a lot of like embroidery and he's got kind of a stylized vest.
Yeah.
He catches and brands a criminal and then Blackheart rebuffs Dynasty. Dynasty says she's calling an emergency meeting of Freedom Machine, which is apparently the world's equivalent of the Avengers or Justice League. And it includes all the members past and present. And Blackheart is just like, I'm not doing that. He says he doesn't deal with that kind of stuff anymore because it distracts him from the real work of protecting a city. So then Dynasty flies to an island just off the coast of Scotland, and here she finds a friend who's tending his garden at a medieval castle. He is later revealed to be Ivanhoe. It's hinted he's like an immortal version of the fictional knight. And this is where we find out what's going on. We are actually at the end of the superhero story for this world. The villains have all been defeated, and superheroes now are kind of in a post-villain era, but there is a faction led by someone named Daedalus who thinks that heroes should actually take over humanity and usher in this utopian age with them in charge.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's an interesting idea. It's one that we haven't really seen much of.
Yeah.
The idea is it's like, oh, the superheroes actually got what they were fighting for.
Right, right.
Yeah, so Ivanhoe says that, of course, he'll stand with Dynasty and the rest of the group, but he'll need a day or two to shut down the island. And then we see Mount Thunder in Colorado, which is where the Freedom Machine's headquarters are located. Freedom Machine meets and discusses the situation. We kind of get a round robin introducing all the other heroes at the table. And then Dynasty says that they are undermanned, but maybe they can recruit some of the teen superheroes they used to work with to help them in the coming conflict. And then we finally see a shadowy figure who is presumably Daedalus watching the meeting through a TV screen. To be continued.
Oh. Wow.
I was surprised at how much I liked this. I liked how it introduced us to a world in a way that felt pretty original. It was filling in the gaps through dialogue that didn't treat the reader like an idiot. The art feels a little bit rough, but I think that's more due to the inks and colors rather than Leek's pencils. Leek was pretty established at this point. He'd been doing a lot of work for Valiant Comics in the earlier part of the 90s. And the character designs, the framing, the angles, they're all really good. They feel very cinematic. But there's something about the overall polish on the final images that feels a little bit amateurish, but like not bad. Just kind of not quite what you would expect from, like, you know, serious seasoned professionals.
Okay.
The writing is honestly way better than it has any right to be. And then I realize it's because Bill Willingham is the guy who wrote Fables.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. Like, the dude's massively talented, and he just released Fables into the public domain a couple of months ago after he finally, I think he just finally got exhausted dealing with DC and, like, bullshit, because I think I remember reading his blog entry, and he was talking about, like, oh, yeah, they would just forget to pay me. And so he...
Okay, jeez Louise.
He, like, announced that he was releasing it into the public domain, and... That's, of course, complicated because DC is like, no, absolutely not. We own the copyright for this. And it's like, well, okay, but it's worth noting. So, yeah, I will say that this was like a real pleasant surprise, and I've got almost the entire run, so I'm going to read through it.
Nice. That's great. Very fun.
Yeah. So how about you? Who are the unknown heroes that you're bringing to us today?
Well, this time I've brought Alter Ego number one.
Okay.
And it's a First Comics limited series published in the year and month of my birth, May 1986.
Okay.
I know. Writers, co-creators, and authors were Roy Thomas and Ron Harris.
Okay.
Co-plotter was Dan Thomas. Letterer was Steve Haney. Colorist was Alex Wald. Editor was Rick Oliver. So... this comic is about a kid who goes into a comic book shop that has appeared overnight in what was just the night before a normal pharmacy.
Okay.
So the owner of the shop gives them a great deal that they can each have a recent back issue since they're his first customers. But Rob Lindsay tells him that he's more interested in Golden Age heroes and asks if he has anything of that nature he can paw through. The shop owner insists that Rob take a big box of comics home with him, even though he doesn't have any money on him, stating, you can just bring back what you don't want later and just pay me for the ones that you do want. And he's like kind of scratching his head because he's like, okay, you're just going to trust some like some kid off the street, but whatever. He takes the comics because the guy really wanted to give them to him. So on the way out of the shop, they literally run into some sketchy looking characters in trench coats and fedoras, one of whom was an attractive lady who catches Rob's attention for some reason.
Right? Is it like, are we talking like Lady in Red situation in The Matrix?
Kind of. She just like, you can see like the peak of her face and he just kind of glimpses her face. It really, honestly, it was happenstance. It was more like he just happened to be turning and she like, shing, like looked up as he was like, whoa, what's going on? I'm running into people. So the sketchy characters go into the comic store as the kids go in a different direction, with Rob going to meet his girlfriend, Jin, at the local McDonald's. Okay. Cue product and logo placement. So Rob is gushing to Jin about how many cool issues are in the box when they see an explosion from down the street. They run to see that it's the comic book store that had gone up in flames, with nearby firefighters telling them that nobody could possibly have lived through the blast.
Oh, man.
And the kids assumed that the owner was still probably in the building. So that night, he's reading the comics, he's listening to the neighbor's dog barking his head off, even more than usual, and Rob notices something funny about the comic he's reading. See, there's this hero he's never heard of, and that doesn't even seem to exist in his reference materials, because he's a big-ass nerd. He's got, like, a whole book of reference, like, what comic is this? He's never heard of this guy.
Okay.
It's this comic from 1941. Rob also notices that one of the villains, the Emerald Empress, reminds him a lot of the woman he had run into earlier in the day as they were leaving the comic book store. He then hears something outside, and the dog is no longer barking, so Rob sneaks out of the house to see what's going on. He finds that the neighbor dog has been strangled, and he's suddenly don't kill the dog, come on.
Yeah.
And he's suddenly surrounded by the Emerald Empress and some of the other villains from the comics that he had just been reading. Just then, Captain Combat, who Rob recognizes as the comic book shop owner, comes onto the scene and kicks butt, scaring away the villains. But not without taking some damage himself. He falls onto the ground, giving a dramatic kind of a goodbye, as he goes from being in color to being in black and white, and then turning into a 2D piece of paper that blows away in the wind. But before this happens, he tells Rob to put the mask on. And Rob's freaking out, as seems appropriate at this point. And he goes home to hopefully wake up from this nightmare. When he gets home, he gets into bed to go to sleep, but wakes up really quickly as he's seeing something glowing in his room. It's the alter ego comic. But instead of the story he had read earlier, the pages are blank, and out falls a mask, like the one that alter ego wears. Rob's confused, because he should definitely have felt that in the comic. It was like a mask, like fitted mask to your face.
Okay.
If it was in there the whole time, he would have felt it. So he's holding the mask. He looks over to a mirror in his room, and he sees alter ego, the hero, standing in his mirror, pointing for him to put the mask on. So he does so, and suddenly he's in a totally different place, as indicated by the large European hall he's landed in, with Nazi flags hanging from an archway. He sees Hitler, Mussolini, and Admiral Tojo, but they seem to be crude and racist caricatures of the men instead of them actually appearing human.
Oh, okay, so they're basically drawn the way they were back in the Golden Age.
Exactly. He's also a different person. He's now an adult and has the same look and physique of alter ego, but with Rob's swoop of white hair that he has in the front normally. So he runs into the other Golden Age heroes trapped in a cell that has an electric current attached to it, and then he runs into the Emerald Empress, who tries to woo him. And he mentions, he's like, I know this is a comic, because he is, in fact, momentarily swayed by her beauty. She asks him to take his mask off, and he does, only to turn back into the kid he really was. An Emerald Empress grabs the mask, but it doesn't send him home. He's instead captured by the evil Axis leaders, who have devolved into even worse caricatures, and they yell to have Rob executed.
Okay.
So they tie him to a pole and are about to execute him by firing squad when the mask flies out of nowhere, cutting the ropes that tied his hands and placing itself on his face. He becomes alter ego again, breaking out the heroes and taking out some side Nazis before going after the big three, who were looking worse and worse at this point.
Okay.
As alter ego takes out the big three, however, they fall apart with springs and cogs like robots or animatronics. Suddenly, a large fiery figure appears, and the heroes gasp as most of them recognize the Crimson Claw. The Nazi structures explode, and the heroes escape. And Rob wakes up in his bed, thinking maybe this was a weird dream.
Okay.
But he finds the mask on his floor, along with the comic. But instead of the previous adventure he had read, or the blank pages he found right afterwards, it was his story drawn into the pages.
Okay.
What he had just experienced. So he goes downstairs to eat breakfast before school. He is tired as shit, by the way. And his grandpa, who he lives with, is like, you look a little peaked. You should maybe stay home from school. And he's like, I have a big math test. I can't stay home from school. So
whatever, nerd.
Right, exactly. So, but his grandpa's like, go ahead, just read the newspaper, like whatever, hope you feel better kind of a thing. And when he's reading the newspaper, on the front cover, he sees a picture of two of the men who had been in the alternate universe. And it's implied, and they had been working for the big three.
Okay.
So it's implied that they're loose in his world now.
Okay.
Yeah. So this was an interesting comic. It definitely wasn't what I was thinking it was at all. It was actually really thoughtful for the time period it was written in, too, having been for the 80s. With the main character, you know, noting the racist ways that the characters were typically portrayed. I also really liked the way it was drawn. The sequence where Captain Combat turned into a comic book page was really neat. Yeah. And I like how they turned this concept, like, into pictures.
Yeah, this sounds really original and interesting, especially for an 80s comic. Like, that's wild. And then I was sitting there thinking, and I'm like, okay, so, like, this is from 81, right?
86.
86, okay. But, it was 86, but then the comic that it's supposedly, like, pulling...
1941.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was sitting there thinking about that. And I'm like, oh, so that's basically the age of comics from the 40s, you know, for this time period, are the same age that comics from the 80s are for this decade.
Yes.
And I was like, that's wild.
Exactly. That's actually very wild to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, all in all, I really liked this issue. I initially found the first issue at Outer Planes at some point, but I found the entire 4-issue series at Harvey Doss's dollar bin sale that you and I attended just the other day. And I had been thinking that I wanted to find the whole thing because I was like, I've never heard of this character before. It was a bundle. So because of their deal, I got all 4 of them for $1 because they were selling all of their comics for $1 in all of these long boxes they had, including bundles of comics. So if there was something taped together or a bunch of them like shoved into one poly bag or something like that, you got that.
Yeah.
You got all of that for $1.
Like, seriously, let's take a minute to shout out Harvey Doss Comics and Collectibles. Oh. They're a local store in Roanoke Park. They only deal in older comics. They buy a lot of lots of comics or collections. And then anything that isn't like an immediate kind of like bigger comic, they kind of leave everything in boxes and they throw it into their dollar bin warehouse. And then once a quarter, they do a big dollar bin sale. And this time they had like 250 long boxes full of dollar comics. It was wild, like just all the stuff that they had there. I found so much cool stuff. I was there for 5 hours. Jessica was only
I literally was gonna
hours,
say but... please I was like I was there for like an hour, yeah, but no, Mike was like, I was there for 5 hours. I was like, yeah, there was no way I was gonna. I literally had to cut myself off because I was like, I can only buy, I like counted it up and I was like, this is what I feel comfortable buying. And actually she took a couple of them off.
Yeah.
Kind of like, I think it was like 40. I had 43 comics and like, she's like, just say 40.
They're really nice about that.
And like, they're very nice. Yeah.
They also like brought Costco pizza for lunch, for everybody. Aww. And I mean,
yeah, they had muffins upstairs. They were so sweet.
Like Harvey and Megan are super sweet. I reached out to them when we were having our wedding and asked if they had any X-Men wedding issues from like the 90s that we could possibly buy off of them. And they're like, oh, no, here, like, just have these. And they not only found the X-Men wedding issue, but they also had a bunch of other X-Men wedding issues from a couple of years ago.
So sweet.
They gave us like $40 worth of comics for free.
Oh, my God.
No, they're total so sweethearts. Sweet. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was actually really sweet. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm meeting, you know, Megan walked me down to show me where the dollar bin room was. And I was like, oh, I'm meeting up with my co-host, we have a podcast. She's like, oh, 10 cent takes.
Yeah, no.
I was like, oh, yes, of course, you know, Mike.
Yeah, no, we're a known entity there at this point. It's nice. They're a lot of fun. Yeah, it was actually really funny because we were at another show in Berkeley the weekend before and Harvey brought his dollar bins there. And so Sarah and I were looking through them and some guy was standing there and Harvey was like, oh, yeah, you should come up for our dollar bin sale. And he looks at us and he's like, they can tell you all about it. And I was like, hell yeah, we can.
So. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, since I got all 4 of them and it was pretty interesting, I don't know. I may have to do like a deep dive or maybe we could do a book
Sounds great.
Episode on this. Yeah. You're interested?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Cool. Yeah. Well, rad. Well, then, yeah, I'll cook something up and see what I can do with it, because I thought it was really fun.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, that is it for today. Next week, we will have another deep dive. I don't know what it's going to be.
Who knows, man?
I don't know. We'll see. Figure it out. Come back next week and figure it out, I guess. The week after that, we will have another dollar bin discovery. But until then, stay safe, and we will see you in the stacks.
Thanks for listening to 10 Cent Takes. Accessibility is important to us, so text transcriptions of each of our published episodes can be found on our website.
This episode was hosted by Jessica Fraser and Mike Thompson, written by Jessica Fraser and edited by Mike Thompson. Our intro theme was written and performed by Jared Emerson Johnson of Bay Area Sound. Our credits and transition music is Pursuit of Life by Evan MacDonald and was purchased with a standard license from Premium Beat. Our banner graphics were designed by Sarah Frank, who's at lookmomdraws.com.
If you'd like to get in touch with us, ask us questions, or tell us about how we got something wrong, please head over to 10centtakes.com or shoot an email to 10centtakes@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter for now. The official podcast account is 10 Cent Takes, all one word. Jessica is Jessica with a, and Jessica is spelled with a K. And Mike is Vansau, V-A-N-S-A-U. You can also find us on Instagram, Mastodon, Facebook, TikTok, and Blue Sky. A full list of our socials will be listed in the show notes.
You can also send us mail now. We are at P.O. Box 940 in Pen Grove, California, 94951. And Pen Grove is spelled P-E-N-N-G-R-O-V-E.
Send us stuff.
If you'd like to support us, be sure to download, rate, and review wherever you listen.
Stay safe out there.
And support your local comic shop.